Bird Air. Win number 1,000 for the great Trevor McCarthy. It comes in the Wolf Hill Stakes as Rainbow Air wins it.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
Hi, I'm Sean Clancy, and today I'm in the room with jockey Trevor McCarthy, winner of 1,582 races for over $53 million in purses. The 26-year-old has already won 11 races in 2021, including the Jimmy Wingfield Stakes at Aqueduct last weekend. Trevor, you had a hell of a 2020. You get COVID, you get married, and you win 143 races. What was that like?
It was good. It was actually really good for the year that we had. It was a little bit of a slower year than we're used to. But with all the the restrictions and with me getting COVID, with me going away to get married and, you know, being out for about 3 months due to the COVID situation, I lost a lot of time. And, you know, it just seemed like even after the summertime, you know, you had to quarantine to go to this track and quarantine to go to that track and back to this track. You know, so it was a lot of quarantining and testing and a little bit of a pain in the butt with everything. But, you know, we got through this year with a pretty successful year, and I was really happy with it.
And the COVID situation, I mean, when you came down with COVID, what was that like? I mean, you had to be concerned? I mean, you have a couple bad days, or what was that like?
Of course, you know, when you first get it and you test positive for it, you're pretty concerned. For me, I was riding down at Colonial at the time. I came home for a couple of days after riding Colonial and came back to Maryland, and I just wasn't feeling good. I hung out at home for a few days, didn't really go anywhere. And I just, one night, I woke up in the middle of the night around 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was freezing to death. Chills, so cold. I was like, that's weird, you know, and I just ran into the living room, grabbed another blanket, and went back to bed. And a couple hours later, I woke up, and I was sweating. I mean, full-out sweat. Now I'm like, oh, man, like, this is just odd, you know. And now another hour goes by. I wake up. I'm freezing cold again. And I'm like, man, I'm really getting worried, you know, because, you know, everybody's, you know, it's COVID year, and, you know, everybody's nervous about it. And so now we wake up early to leave that morning to go down to work horses at Colonial, and Katie wakes up and she goes, all right, come on, let's go, you know, get up. I said, we're not going to go anywhere. And what do you mean? You know, I have a bunch of horses to work this morning. I said, I'm sick as a dog. I've got chills. I got a fever now. I got a headache. You know, I just think, you know, I'm really not feeling that great. We shouldn't risk it. And at that time, I was doing really good at the Colonial meet. I was leading rider. I was winning 4 or 5 a night. And it was like the worst thing that could happen. It was almost like I was doing so good. And I was like, man, it's like something's bound to happen, you know, because it's just like everything is falling in the right place at the right time. I can't do anything wrong. I'm in the zone. And it's just like, you know, it's too good to be true. After being sick in bed for about 2 days, it was more like a flu for me. You know, if I had to put it to any sense, it was like having the flu. I was sick for 2 days, and by the third day, I was feeling much better. So I scheduled a test to go get tested, and sure enough, I was positive, and Katie was negative, which was odd, you know, because she never left my side. We do everything together. We live together. We eat together. We work together. So for her to not get it was a bit odd. And then I was sick for, you know, probably 5-6 days. After the 7th and 8th day, I was fine. I only lost my taste and smell for a day. And I went back 2 weeks later. I got a test and I was negative, which they thought I would be positive again. But if I were to quarantine for 14 days, I'd be fine. But they thought it was very unusual that I was negative. And they thought it was very unusual that Katie came up negative again 2 weeks later after she quarantined with me, and she never left my side. She only got one symptom, and that was she lost her taste and smell. But she never had a fever. She never got cold, chills, none of that. So it was really an odd experience.
Well, Katie's just tougher than you.
Yeah, I guess so. You can put it that way.
What's it like being married to a jockey? Does that help or hurt? I mean, what's it like for you two to, you guys got to kind of be there for each other and try to learn from each other, I guess, being jockeys?
Yeah, in the beginning, dating, it was a little unusual, you know, because here I'd have a great day and then she wouldn't have a good day, so she'd be kind of down the dumps and then I'd be on a high, you know. So we would go home and, you know, I would have a bad day and she'd have a good day, you know. And it's like, you know, when we have a good, when I have a good day, I try and pick her up. When I have a bad day and she has a good day, she tries to pick me up, and we try and always bounce off each other and throw each other pointers. And, you know, I've learned a lot from her and changed, you know, certain styles or tried new things that she might, you know from either, you know, learning in experience or, you know, learning from her father. And, you know, I try and pass her on things that I've learned from my father. So it really worked out well in that sense. With this year, with the COVID, it's been really stressful on us both because, you know, I was traveling different places and, you know, we weren't allowed to go places and then come back and not be with each other. So, like, for instance, she wanted to stay in Maryland to ride and I was going to go down to Colonial. Well, Laurel didn't want us to separate. You know, they wanted us to stay together and pick one track to ride at. And they were kind of saying that, you know, we don't want you guys going back and forth and God forbid you bring it back and she gets sick and so forth. Same here with this situation at Naira this winter, with the coupling, us being an entry, that's been really hard because, you know, it's got a little bit of an effect on our business. At the moment, we're having the jockeys go work to resolve this problem with the New York State Gaming Commission. And, you know, it's kind of hurting us in the long run because NYRA is just the racing office. They sometimes won't use races because they have the couple or, you know, they're, you know, we won't be able to pick up horses because, you know, it's not possible to make up an entry last minute. And, you know, they don't want to use races that are going to have entries when there's, you know, 4, 5, 6 horse fields and small fields. So they won't even use the races. So sometimes we have to sit out races to let the races go, which is a huge effect on both of our business. So there's just been a lot of obstacles this year for both of us. But, you know, we both love each other and we both support each other and try and do the best we can. And at the end of the day, we come home healthy and safe. And we just, you know, try and go out there and do it the next day again. So
That's important. That's the way to keep it. And you got a good perspective on it. Take me back to the beginning. I mean, your dad, obviously, very successful jockey. Did you always want to be a jockey watching him ride as a kid? Was it always in your mind? Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Since day one, it's been on my mind. You know, it was like, my mother says that she would take me to, I had afternoon preschool, so she'd take me, I had morning preschool. She would take me to the races after preschool. I got out. My preschool was right there, and that's the Delaware Park. So we used to go to the races to watch my father ride. And I used to hang on to the fence and scream, kick and scream, and she'd be trying to pull me off the fence to go home, you know, and I didn't want to leave. And the last race of the day, you know, I couldn't wait till the last race because, you know, then my father, he'd bring me up to the jocks room, you know, after he rode, and he would shower, and I'd be able to hang up in the jocks room, wait for him, and hang out with all the jocks and be in the room. And even in the morning, you know, same thing. I'd just want to get up in the morning. Sometimes I would beat him in the morning. I'd be up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, going to his bed. Dad, are you ready yet? You know, are you awake? And he's like, we still got another hour of sleep. Go back to sleep, you know? But I couldn't wait to be out there with him and follow him and just learn so much from him. I just, you know, he was like an idol to me, like a hero. So, it was just great following him around.
Sure, exactly. And did he ever give you any advice or ever try to talk you out of it, or was he always 100% supportive?
No, always 100% supportive, always. And, you know, sometimes I think, man, you know, for my kids, you know, sometimes I think, man, I hope they are not riders. But sometimes I'm like, oh, I hope they are riders. For him, he was like set, like, oh, this kid wants it. I'm going to push this kid, you know. And he's pushed me, you know, pretty far, pretty hard. And even in the beginning when I started riding, it was like every race, he's on the phone with me after every race. And, you know, you got to do this, you got to do that. And, you know, all the jocks be like, man, tell your dad, stop calling. You know, I come in from a race, oh, your phone's ringing, your dad's on the phone, you know. So he was tough on me, but you know, I was glad he was tough on me.
Oh, wow. And what did he tell you? What's one of the few things you learned from him?
Biggest thing that he always says, you know, save ground, you know, stay on the fence, save ground, be patient. You know, he'd always push that into my head. You know, be patient, save ground. You know, don't worry, don't stress, don't get in a panic. You know, if you got a horse, you'll be able to get out somewhere down the line most, you know, 9 times out of 10. So just be patient. And, you know, that was big for me.
Well, back when I was riding jump races, I was sitting in the hot box at Delaware Park, and he walked in there and he looked at me, and I guess I was a little bit of a heavy jump jock, and he looked at me and he said, you ought to be ashamed of yourself sitting in here looking like that. And I thought, wow. And his discipline was something that I picked up on, you know, as I watched him. I was galloping for Roger Atfield, and he'd come in there and work some horses for us back then. That's something you had to pick up, I guess, that discipline with your weight, with the approach to riding races.
Yeah, it's hard, you know, and you got to be disciplined. You got to be dedicated. And for me, I don't have a choice, you know, and it's like, I have to lose weight. I have to watch my diet. You know, I have to work out, you know, 6 out of the 7 days a week. So I have to stay fit. You know, I don't have a choice. You know, if I stop riding, or, you know, if I stop working out, you know, I get pretty heavy. So, you know, for me, it's always discipline, always trying to better myself, always trying to stay focused and, you know, study, you know, just try and treat myself like an athlete the best I can, you know. So, you know, treat my body well. I get work done on my body, chiropractor. I do cryotherapy, acupuncture. I do a lot of stretching at night, in the daytime before I ride. So I always just try and, you know, take care of my body.
Definitely, and you can tell that by how you ride. I mean, you're a very strong rider, and you know, built like your dad, taller than most guys. Is that something you have to work on? I mean, emulating other jockeys and to try to fold that style and get low.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's like with Katie, you know, she's so small. She's like a little ball, and you know, here I am. We're at dinner, you know, and she orders the penne alla vodka. I order, you know, fish with maybe some broccoli, and you know, we're looking over at each other. This is when we first started dating, like, you know, and I'm like sitting there, I'm like, man, you kidding me? Like, she's like, what? You know, and I'm like, here I am. Oh no, I'm sorry. It was like a filet mignon, or you know, a big T-bone steak and like potatoes, and you know, I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, I'm over here. This guy's probably like, man, what a wussy this guy is, you know. He's getting a fish and broccoli, and here's his girlfriend. You know, she's got steak and potatoes, you know. And I'm like, man, you have no idea. You know? And she's like, well, what do you mean? You know, so now after 3 years of dating, she finally gets it. You know, she finally understands, like, okay, when we come home and we eat, you know, we have to eat light, you know, salad and fish and all that. And for her, you know, she can kind of eat whatever she wants. But, you know, it's kind of better that I've kind of bettered her diet by her hanging out with me. But, you know, back to you saying, you know, folding up and stuff like that, that's different things where I try and tell her, you know, she's got to fold up. And she's like, oh, I can't, you know, I'm trying to get as low as I can, you know. But I feel like for some of those little riders, they're like, you know, like Katie, she's like a little ball, you know. And some of them guys, they're small, but they ball up a little bit. And for her, she's got really big legs. and she's solid, you know, and big shoulders, big back. She's solid. And for us, I think it might be a little bit easier to fold up just because we're so tall. You know, we got to get down, and we're so skinny, and we can, you know, flat, kind of lay flatter than some of these guys that kind of sit a little higher up and almost like that ball-y effect.
For sure. You want to be the lizard on the log, right?
Yeah, you know, and it's something I've been working on at Aqueduct. I found that, you know, the wind is so strong, you know, so I'm like, man, I got to really get low the whole way, you know, stay in a good stance, you know, and try and be as aerodynamic as I can, because the wind is just so, so strong here coming off the water. And we get some of these days, and it's like, man, you know, that's a lot for horses. I mean, it's a big weight difference. Sometimes that's a little edge that I get that some people don't realize.
And take me through the move to New York. You're based there this winter. Is your plan to stay there year-round, or you take that as it comes? Or what's the strategy?
You know, I'm just going to stay for the wintertime. With Laurel and all the restrictions, I'm kind of like, man, I'm missing out on some of the horses that were traveling around this summer. And, you know, New York, they have a great stakes program, and they upped their purses big time this year. So, you know, I kind of want to take a step forward, see where things go, and, you know, try and learn a few different other things, being at a different racetrack. You know, it's just like being at one racetrack all the time, you don't get to learn everything, you know. You learn different things, being around different jockeys at different racetracks. You learn how to ride that track. So for me, it's a great learning experience to get out, try and make some connections over the winter time, and then go back home. And when those guys kind of ship down and they kind of know us a little bit more, and we can build some connections for our shipping business down at Laurel. So it's just kind of like a stepping stone, I would say.
No, you've done that very well. You've taken your stepping stones. We watched you grow up around Fair Hill, riding out for your dad and Grand Motion, and you're making it big. Very proud of you. One last question. Who's on the Mount Rushmore of jockeys for you, the guys that you emulate, your heroes?
I would say my hero, I would say that's riding now, a hero would be Johnny B. He's a guy that is so passionate about the sport. He's very passionate about jockeys. You know, and sometimes he's very strong in his opinions on what needs to be done for us. And, you know, he's a world-class rider. I love the way he rides. He's a little taller like I am. And just watching him, I've learned so much from him. And just talking with him, you know, he's just one of those guys that I just, like, pay attention to all the time. Yeah, he's an older guy. Does he win all the races in the world like he used to? No, but he still knows how to get it done. He still knows how to win the big races. And, you know, just watching him and listening to him all the time is so huge to me, you know. And I worship that guy. He's like my idol. He is my idol.
Yeah, I always say with Johnny, though, he's the most definitive rider I've ever seen. He makes decisions. Even when they're wrong, he makes decisions. If you watch him day in, day out, he makes decisions, whether he's going to the lead or getting the spot, saving ground, or coming from out of it. He always makes those decisions. It's something a jockey has to do.
Yeah, he's very, like you said, with his decisions, he's very firm on them. So if he goes out there and he gets a feeling or a gut feeling, it's like, bang, he does it. Bang, he does it. And Mike Smith the same way. Boom, they do it, you know. It's like they go for it, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't, you know. But at the same time, when they see a window open of an opportunity either to get in or get out or take advantage of a spot, or maybe somebody made a wrong move, they're going to take advantage of it, and they don't even question themselves, you know, because they just have all that experience.
That's Trevor McCarthy taking advantage of his opportunities and experiences. And Trevor, we're proud of you. We'll keep watching you and keep it rolling, buddy.
Thanks so much, John.